To get more information on the tournament and to get more insight on it, we go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, and we bring in Dan Wilkin of USA Today. Dan, welcome to the program, man. Thanks for getting up.
Hey, no problem. How are you?
I'm really well, man. Yourself?
Good. Everything's good.
All right, so let's start with this. So late last night, the Ohio State Buckeyes got the win. What'd you think of that win for Ohio State?
Well, I didn't get to see a ton of the game. Surprised, I would say, just because Ohio State, I thought, was probably the worst at-large team in the field. You know, you take a lot of teams that go under 500 in the tournament, and you don't expect them to advance. If you looked at their resume, they didn't have the kind of wins that suggested that they were going to beat an Iowa State team that had just won the Big 12 tournament. But you have to give a lot of credit to Chris Holtmann, who's just an excellent coach, and those guys who really played a terrific game. And that's the NCAA tournament in a nutshell right there. Is, you know, a team can, I wouldn't necessarily say disappointing year, but can have a kind of a mediocre record, and, you know, but just do enough to get into the tournament. And then once they get there, you know, it's a 40-minute basketball game, and you've got to play, and they played better than Iowa State when it mattered.
Yeah, and that's really all you can do in this tournament. It's the best part of it. It's one and done. Anything can happen. The craziness that ensues, and that's, I hate to say it, man, that's what's been missing of this tournament so far. I mean, we've had a couple of upsets and that stuff along the way, but we haven't had those overtime games. We haven't had those buzzer beaters. We haven't had those nail biters and that stuff. It's just kind of been a straightforward tournament through 2 days.
Well, yeah, you know, again, every year is going to be different. You know, sometimes you're going to get the UMBC shocker, and sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're going to get the three-pointer to win, fading away, you know, with three people in your face, and sometimes it's just going to kind of be like a regular basketball game. And you can't predetermine it. I don't think it's the fault of the bracket or the committee or whatever. You seed the teams, and you build the bracket, and then you let them go play, and that's really all anyone can do. And then, you know, it's up to the players and the coaches to determine how good the games are going to be.
Yeah, and I'm not coming at the committee, and I'm not saying anything against the teams and that stuff, but, you know, with it's March Madness, you know, and so far it's kind of been March, I wouldn't say, like, mediocre or anything like that, but it's been March fairly calm.
Yeah, I hear you. We're still sort of waiting for the one big story to emerge, although I will say I think Ja Morant and Murray State have kind of captured people's imagination a little bit, just based on what he did, and you know, the hype around him, to the extent there was hype, was based on the fact that this guy was going to go top three in the NBA draft, and no one had really seen him except for the hardest of hardcore college basketball fans, and then he gets on that stage and delivers like he did against Marquette. I do think there's some buzz there.
Yeah, and that was where I was going to head with this. So, Ja Morant, I mean, outside of a couple of people who were, you know, streaming on ESPN8 to catch their Murray State games, like, there weren't a ton of people who really saw this kid play until this game, and he just stepped right up on the stage, and you saw all of those tools that you read about right there on display. Does this mean that Murray State can make a little bit deeper of a run in this tournament just because Ja looks like he's playing so well?
Well, I think they have the capability. Now, will they actually get it done? Who knows? They've got a tough one, I think, today with Florida State. You know, that's a team that, as you go through the course of the season, you know, I think they're probably better than a lot of maybe non-ACC fans want to give them credit for. I think, you know, I think that Ja is going to play well again. I would be surprised if he doesn't. And look, you win this game, and then all of a sudden you get Gonzaga. Like, there's a path, I think, for that Murray State team, you know, to maybe be like Loyola and go to the Final Four. It's a long shot, but it's I don't see any teams in that region that would be just impossible for them to imagine beating. But I do think they're underdogs against Florida State. Florida State's huge on the front line. They're long. You know, they've got guys like Terrence Mann who are veterans who've played in a lot of NCAA tournament games. I like Florida State. I pick Florida State. But, yeah, if Murray somehow knocks those guys off today, then it really gets rolling.
Yeah, and I think you're 100% right on that thing. Dan Wilkin joining us from USA Today. looking at the rest of the brackets and that stuff, which number one seed do you think is sitting on the shakiest ground?
You know, I think I don't think for this weekend any of them are. You know, you start to look more long term. I still think Gonzaga has some question marks. I mean, I like their team, and I know that all the analytics suggest that they are legitimately one of the four best teams in the country. But you know, there's still you know, something a little bit strange to me, kind of about the way they played in that St. Mary's game. You know, maybe they were just bored. You know, they'd beaten that team earlier by 30, 40 points, and there's something certainly to be said for that. But I just I do sort of just wonder kind of where they're at mentally. You know, I think it's hard for them to maintain their edge, that same edge, over the course of the whole season when they're playing in the West Coast Conference. Obviously, a couple years ago, they cruised to the Final Four, and it didn't impact them. But I like their team. I haven't loved their team, and I think they're in a tough, you know, deal. I mean, I think Michigan's really good. I think, you know, I think potentially a game against Murray State would be really interesting because they're not going to have the best player on the court. So I think they're on the shakiest ground. But you know, having said that, they're excellent.
Right. It's the chair where one leg is just a tiny bit short, where it's just kind of annoying, but it's not going to really cause any damage.
Yeah, I mean, look, part of it in the tournament, you have to figure out, like, who's the star guy who's going to, you know, who's going to kind of transcend the game, transcend the moment, and, you know, I don't want to use a cliche and say will his team to win, but, you know, sometimes a lot of these games just come down to who's going to just take the ball and make a play, and you have to have that guy. So I think I don't know if Gonzaga really does, and that's one thing I would worry about. I like Rui Hachimura. I don't know if he's a guy who is your best player you can count on, you know, to just go create shots in a pressure situation.
All right, so now I got to ask the Zion Williamson question because it's just required. So 6'7", Zion Williamson will be going up against 7'6", Taco Fall from UCF as Duke takes on UCF. What do you think of that matchup for Duke?
Well, I think it's an interesting game for a variety of reasons. You've got in UCF a team that is coached by Johnny Dawkins, who was part of Mike Krzyzewski's first really big turnaround team at Duke that kind of got that whole thing going. So that's a lifelong relationship for them that is interesting. You've got Danny White, the athletic director at UCF. He's the son of Kevin White, who's the athletic director at Duke. So there's a lot of sort of personal connections built into that game. And then you've got Zion Williamson, who is just kind of a uniquely built person who's doing things at his size that we've never seen before. And then you've got Taco Fall, who's 7'6" and is literally one of the tallest people in the world. So I think, you know, Taco is a great story, and he's a terrific person. And he's an interesting player just because of his size. He is not a great player. He's not a guy who, you know, moves particularly well around the court. He's not, you know, sometimes he gets in foul trouble. But at 7'6" in a college basketball game, there are things you can do. So, yeah, what will happen? How will that matchup go? I mean, I don't know if Zion and him will be matched up one-on-one, you know, all the time. But I do think that there's going to be enough matchup there that we'll get a couple moments that kind of make us, you know, question, you know, what's about to happen if we're about to get an amazing poster of, you know, Zion trying to go up against a 7'6" guy.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what everybody is kind of sort of looking for. And I mean, from what it seems like, you know, these tournaments seems to always make celebrities out of various people. And Taco Fall seems to be that guy. And his great quote that's circulating all over the place, if I'm not going to let Zion get in that poster, you know, get me on that poster or anything like that, is fantastic. And so it just makes everything more fun. So what do you think of Zion projecting him? Is this somebody who's going to be something unbelievable in the NBA, or is this just kind of, okay, in college you can get away with this, but he doesn't quite have a position and, you know, looking going forward?
Yeah, I'm pretty sold on Zion at this point. You know, you can talk about position and where he plays and whether the jump shot is good enough. and I get all that. I think I look at the rate of improvement since he's been in college over this last year. He is a much better all-around player than he was, and I think that suggests that there's still room for him to grow and get better. And I think getting into the NBA in an NBA fitness, nutrition program with all that goes along with it, I think he'll be better. And I think there's at least a chance he's going to be the best player in the NBA at some point. It's not a given. A lot of things can go wrong. A lot of development needs to be done, but there's at least that chance that he could be that. And you can't say that about too many guys very often.
All right, if Dan Wilkin was the GM of the team with the second overall pick in the NBA draft, you would select?
I think as of today, the popular answer would be Ja Morant, whereas at some points in the season, it would probably have been R.J. Barrett. Look, I think R.J. is good. I think there's a lot of things in his game that translate well to the next level, and I think he'll be a good pro. There are some things in his game that I don't like, and I wish he was a little bit better finisher. You know, he's not shot the ball great, but he does have sort of the classic NBA body. I think he can be an effective secondary, really good secondary playmaker, but that will require him to understand he's not the primary playmaker on an NBA team. So we'll see. I think as of today, most people would say Ja, but I do think RJ's got a very bright future as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a tough question. It's one of the hardest questions you're going to get through this whole thing, and the buzz for Ja Morant after this first game is just so through the roof, and it was kind of funny because R.J. Barrett kind of had a quiet, 23-point game or something like that? I mean, it was a quiet 23 points, and that's so hard to do while still being, you know, a part of the game and all that kind of stuff, and it really does show how good a player is when you score 23 points and you have to look at the box score to realize it.
Oh, for sure, yeah, and you know, he's got like last night was a classic example. I just sort of look up at the end of it and it's like, oh, wow, he had a really good game. And I didn't necessarily think that as it was happening. So, yeah, he's one of those kinds of guys. And he's going to fill a lot of stat sheets in the NBA, no doubt about it.
All right, so last question, and it's more advice than anything else, Dan. So I have to go to a 3-year-old's birthday party at a kid's establishment while all these games are going on. What is my best bet to watch these games, do you think? Or am I just done? There's just nothing I can do.
Well, I mean, you can get all these games on your phone now.
I know. Am I going to be single if I do this?
Well, I can't speak to the dynamics and whatever relationships are going on in your life, but I would think that you get sort of a dispensation to look at what's going on in March and, you know, at least have it just sort of passively in the background on your phone.
Right. Like, I'm not going to try to be rude about this whole thing and just stand in the corner staring at my phone, but I should pay attention. It is for work, right? It makes sense.
Hey, whatever you got to tell yourself, man.
All right. Dan, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much. You can read him at USA Today. He is Dan Wilkin. Thanks, man.
Yeah, sure.